You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to tonight's broadcast of the Political Cesspool. I'm Winston Smith, and I'm joined by Sam Bushman, who is working frantically to try to get a hold of our guest for the second hour, but the phone numbers don't seem to be working, or they don't seem to be answering. The joys of live radio, that's just what happened. So until Sam is able to reach these people, it's going to be up to me, and if it doesn't work, well, he and I will muddle through. We're good muddlers. All right. By the way, in case you missed the first hour, the reason I'm here tonight is because James and his lovely wife, Danny, are celebrating their 13th wedding anniversary. And we want to take a moment to wish them happy anniversary for this evening and to wish them many, many more. They've both been such a blessing to both of us. James's contributions to our causes have been immeasurable, and he's had a good wife supporting him and helping him to make it all happen. So happy anniversary, James and Danny. Look forward to having you back, James. All right. The Duggars. Y'all remember the Duggars, don't you? They are that family that has had so many children. I think the latest tally is 19. That they were given a television series about their lives. They are a solid Christian family, and they espouse conservative political views. And for that, the left has vilified few families as badly as they have vilified the Duggars. I remember some of the vile and vulgar names that the woman of the house, Michelle, has been called. Some of them are I wouldn't expect to hear on a Navy ship. But that's the left for you. They have no compunction about just lambasting someone that they just can't stand. That's the left. They are all about insult. They are all about domination. They are all about power.
Hi, Winston. It's Amelia.
The family was treated like they were some kind of criminal. It seems like no matter what they said or did, the left held them in utter contempt and criticize them incessantly. Well, that behavior from the left continues to this day. The Washington Post publishes an abridged morning edition of their liberal rag, and it's called The Express. It's just the most important stories from their main newspaper. I pick it up in the morning so that I can do the crossword puzzle and the Scrabblegrams at lunch. It has a section called Trending, in which they print snarky, sarcastic, and childish tweets from some of their readers. And I read those only when an interesting picture catches my eye.
Hi, that aside, Amelia. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, this is Amelia.
Oh, okay. poor Stephanie was trying to get my attention, and I'm reading an article.
You're fine.
Well, Amelia, welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you for taking the time, and we're having some trouble getting the other guests. So, look, let's get right into it.
Sounds good.
Now, you, like me, are a kinist, right?
Yes.
What does that mean to you?
Well, I think basically it's just a love for your family and for your people, and I think that's where people who don't understand what kinism is start to think that it's this big scary thing, but it's a basically it's just love for your family. And I mean, how could anyone say they don't love their family first? And that extends from there out to your race, which is, you know, your larger family culturally too.
I agree. One's race is just an extended system of tribes and clans. That's all a race is. And there's nothing wrong with that. Go ahead.
I was just saying exactly. Yeah, you're right.
Okay. It seems these days that the white race is the only race that is not allowed to celebrate the fact that we do exist as a separate culture and a separate race. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, I am hearing that more and more. I haven't encountered that personally in my life, but I hear that in the news. I see it online that they're pushing the precedence and preference of other races above the white race.
And, of course, they're even encouraging miscegenation of the white race into others. No other race is encouraged to engage in miscegenation. Only the white race. All the advertising that you see shows, a white person and a non-white person, and it's always the preponderance is that the white people have to dilute their own bloodlines. Does that cause you concern?
Yep. Yes, it does, and I hadn't before thought of the idea that they're not pushing miscegenation for any of the other races, but now that you say that, I think that's true. I see advertisements, I see magazine articles, magazine covers, all over the place pushing miscegenation for the white people, and I think that it's crazy that no one notices,
Oh, plenty of people do notice, and somebody could come back and say, "Well, if the advertisements have one white person and one non-white person, that means they're pushing miscegenation on the other race as well." But you never see advertisements or television shows that show a black person and a Hispanic person in a miscegenated relationship. You never see an Asian person and a Jewish person. It's always somebody and white. Never any of the other non-white races.
That's a good point. Yep, you're right.
Are you concerned about the future for white people in the United States and in the world?
I am, and I think, I see the immigration issue coming up, and so many of the people coming in are having, large families, many children. So it just seems, kind of a numbers game where the white people aren't reproducing. And, eventually, it sounds like there's going to be trouble brewing, really, for the white race and for the white people.
What kind of trouble do you see? I mean, for me, I see that when we become the minority race, suddenly all the benefits and all the nice things that go to minorities are going to go away because we will be the minority and they don't want us to have any of that.
Yep. Yeah, well, I see...
Stephanie says we have music coming, so stay on.
Okay.
Folks, stay with us.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads, a divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
TalkRight, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. TalkRight makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download TalkRight today from Google Play or the App Store.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
Good evening, folks. Thank you for staying for the break. Thanks for joining us for tonight's broadcast of Political Festival. I'm Winston Smith, and producer Sam Bushman is still working furiously to make the remainder of this hour happen. Sam is a trooper, and he knows his business, and if there's a way he can solve this, if there's a way for it to be solved, he will solve it. But in the meantime, I'm talking with a nice lady named Marie, and we're talking about her concerns over the precarious state of the of white people these days. And she's concerned about it, as I am and as we all should be. Now, Marie, you have children, correct?
I do, yes.
How many do you have?
I have three, and I have one on the way.
Due in October, I believe?
Yes, that's correct.
Ah, congratulations. That's great news.
Thank you.
Well, since you have these three and eventually four children, are you concerned about their future?
Oh, definitely, yes. And especially, you know, with what I see going on in South Africa and the white people there, how they're becoming the minority, and you know, the people who are against them, just, they hate them. They do not want them around. They don't want them to live. They don't want them to have any of the benefits of living in a society. So I definitely see that as an issue if we're moving in that direction.
And it was the white South Africans who made South Africa prosperous. While apartheid was in play, white South Africa was prosperous and everybody benefited from it. The blacks in South Africa, they had a good standard of living. Now they're eating mud cakes. They're getting by on mud cakes. They've taken over the farms, and the farms are not producing because they don't know how to farm. They took all the farms from the white farmers, and now they're starving. And their solution is to kill more white people. So I certainly understand your concern there.
Yeah.
So as a mother, who is concerned about these disturbing trends that you see, these frightening trends. You have these three, soon to be four children. What are you doing to prepare them, or what are you doing to equip them for what could be a bleak future?
Well, right now, just worldview training. You know, you can start very young, knowing what you believe, not falling for the lies around us, not being involved in, you know, just the things of the culture. We don't watch movies, television, stuff like that. We do Bible study. We do worldview training, even though they're still very young. Give them a solid foundation so that when they start encountering anti-Christian culture, that they will have a good solid foundation to lean on, and that knowledge there to give them direction where to go.
So for you, it's spiritual and intellectual training.
Yes.
How involved in your husband in their training? How involved is your husband in their training?
He helps with the schooling. We do devotions together. It's hard. He is able to be home most of the time, thankfully. He does work from home a good amount. So that's really helpful to have him in the house. If I need help with discipline issues or training issues, I can always go to him for his support, and it's good to have, you know, two parents around a lot of the time, as compared to households where the dad is out of the home, has a long commute, and he's not able to be around. I think that's definitely a good situation to have, where the husband and father can be involved a lot more. And I'm very thankful that we have that kind of a situation in our house.
Well, I'm glad for you. I see so many articles, and I have some female friends who, unfortunately, the husband is not able or not willing to they're not willing or able to be around and to help out, and they find their lives to be miserable. They wish their husbands would be more involved. Sometimes the husband just cannot because he has a long commute and he's tired. Sometimes he's just disinterested. And the thing that galls me more than anything is when they tell me that their husband is involved in gaming. Nothing makes me madder than to imagine a man sitting at a computer screen playing a video game while his kids are running around the house and his poor wife is trying to keep order and trying to make decisions about budgeting and the other things. So, you know, thank God you don't have to deal with that. I know you are concerned and maybe even fearful for the future of your children. Do you have any sort of hope at all?
Yes, I do, and I think that's where my faith gives me a good, strong foundation. You know, I do look to South Africa and say, you know, things are going crazy there. Is that where we're going to go? But, you know, God can definitely turn things around, and that's where we need to remain vigilant in training the next generation and doing what we can now to prepare, even if it's going to be a total collapse, to prepare for something like that or to prepare our children. But, you know, God will make a way, and things definitely seem crazy now, but I definitely think that being post-millennial, I have a great hope for the future.
Excuse me, I'm getting a tickling cough. So you don't put a lot of faith in voting our race into success or voting our people into prosperity. It's not. Voting is not going to do it. Political activism is not going to do it. you're doing it via the home and via the heart.
I personally do feel that that's what I've been called to do. I know a lot of people who are involved in political activism, and I'm not going to say whether that's useless or whether it's futile, you know, but I don't think that we're going to have a lot of change come that way just because, you know, it starts with the hearts of the people, and so you really got to address that issue first if you want to see any lasting change.
I think it was Mark Twain who said that if voting could change anything, it would be made illegal. Have you heard that?
I have, yes. That's a good quote.
You do have hope for the future, but it's not going to be an activism. And I appreciate you saying that. You're not going to say that's good or bad, because, you know, I am something of a political activist myself, and I know a lot of people who are. But have you ever endured any harassment or abuse from other women because you decided to? We got to go to a break, folks. Stay with us. We'll continue talking with Amelia when we come back from the break.
Claiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
16 federal investigators are at Naval Air Station Jacksonville in Florida to determine why a plane with 143 on board slid off a runway into a river. Roof Landsberg is with the National Transportation Safety Board.
We're here to begin the investigation of the Miami Air International crash. We'll be looking at the human aspects, which includes the flight crew and the cabin crew. We'll be looking at the machine, that'll be the aircraft itself. And then finally, the environment, which would include the airport, the weather, and air traffic control.
The Run for the Roses is finished. Maximum Security has won the Kentucky Derby. Country House, a 6-1 long shot, comes in second, and Code of Honor came in third place. This is USA Radio News.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people with credit card debt. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, the first step is yours. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-406-0046. 800-406-0046. That's 800-406-0046. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services or by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM-19, Oregon DM-80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission. License number DC-32.
Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido is stepping up efforts to rally the military to overthrow President Nicolas Maduro. On Tuesday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Maduro was on the verge of fleeing the country, but Russia stopped him. This claim President Putin denied on a call with President Trump.
I had a very good talk with President Putin, probably over an hour, and he is not looking at all to get involved in Venezuela other than he'd like to see something positive happen for Venezuela.
Former FBI Director James Comey has spoken publicly about the redacted Mueller report. He was asked if he thinks President Trump is guilty of obstruction of justice.
This president is unconstrained by norms, by law, by ethics. when he doesn't like something, he endeavors to shut it down. And he felt threatened by an investigation and tried to shut it down.
Comey interviewed on KNX Radio in Los Angeles. You're listening to USA Radio News.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back, my friends. Welcome back to this evening's broadcast of Political Cesspool. I'm Winston Smith, sitting in for James Edwards, who with his lovely wife, Danny, are out celebrating their 13th wedding anniversary. The inimitable Sam Bushman has taken a bad situation and brought it back to being normal. So I want to thank Amelia for staying on a little longer while Sam took on this problem. And God bless you, Amelia. You're a good guest. Thanks so much. Right now, I welcome a nice lady named Marie. And as I said, she's a very nice lady. I've known her for some time. And welcome to the Political Cesspool, Marie.
Thanks, Winston. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I guess you know the gist of what we're talking about. Can you tell me something about your journey from into ethno-nationalism, into kinism, into being a race realist?
Sure. I grew up with covenantal theology being impressed upon me from an early age. But we didn't come to racial realism, kinism, whatever you want to label it, until I was an older age in my family. I was probably in my 20s. And I really resisted it in the beginning, and I'll probably get more into that a little bit later. But I found it really hard to come to because I had lived a more sheltered life and hadn't experienced the cultural differences that can mark racial differences even when living inside the same culture. So it took me probably 2 or 3 years once I'd been introduced to the idea, actively working through it, to accept that, wow, this is a thing and I need to hold to it.
Did you find you had to unlearn a lot of things before you embraced kinism?
Yes, simply because, like I said, I did live in a more secluded or sheltered, not secluded, but like, the people that I were exposed to of other races were mostly adopted in by white families, white Christian families, and so they acted like, for the most part, white Christians. And so I had to unlearn just like the idea that they don't, different races don't all act like the races that I interact with. So, and a lot of the compassion that our culture in general pushes is an appropriate compassion. That was a lesson to learn too.
So when you came upon this realization that that the races do not all behave the same, what was your reaction?
Well, that an acceptance of kinism. I mean, that's what it was. I think what brought me closest was I don't know, a file or a book. It was called The Color of Crime, and it was just cold hard facts about race and different crimes committed by the race. And just looking at the numbers, it was like, there's no way to avoid this, that you're seeing a difference by race. And then, you know, going further than just crime, you see school tests like I have a friend whose father was a fire chief, and the test in order to work at the fire department, like, you know, all of those, you see racial disparities in the numbers that resulted. So just seeing those cold, hard numbers I said, okay, I have to accept this. There's no way around it. You know, and people in this day and age, they'll poo-poo that and they'll say, oh, well, it's rigged or whatever you want to call it. And it's like, well, actually, it's rigged against us. Like, you look at FBI and they'll label, when they're categorizing crimes, they'll label Hispanics as white. But when they're characterizing victims, you know, you've got whites labeled as Hispanics, and it's like, okay, that's not how it should be. So you see that it's actually slated against, not for whites. So,
What pressing issues do you see facing us these days? What gives you most concern?
I think my concern has to do with the church. It has to do with the family. I am a housewife, and I had some experience in the child midwifery field before I got married. And just looking at how even Western medicine is slated against large families, but you know that's targeted at Caucasians because, you know, we're the ones that are having the small families. The minorities generally do tend to have larger families, and there's a lot going on in the OB-GYN section where first you have, they'll do convenient C-sections. Oh, well, the baby's late when it's not actually, even by, like, medical terms, it's not late, but they just decided it's too late for you, and so they decided to schedule a C-section or induction, and they rush the birth. And the reason that's important is because the more C-sections you have, the more dangerous it becomes to have more babies, and even getting to a point where, you know, a woman's reproductive organs might have to be removed, that the chances go up by the time you've had your first C-section that that's going to happen, that a condition will happen that will cause that to be necessary. And so you have the chances of a large family diminishing. You have the World Health Organization saying, well, the best childbearing years are between 18 and 25, and then recommending 2 to 5 years between pregnancy. Well, that doesn't give you very many years to have babies, and that doesn't give you a very large family. And then you also have the higher rate of marriage. I mean, the age of marriage, you know, it's going up. And so you have a lot of things, just like in the medicine world, that concern me as a housewife, like talking to other housewives where that I'll hear them say, oh, the doctor told me I can never have a baby naturally. I'll always have to have C-sections, which, as I pointed out earlier, means they're going to have smaller families. And they're just, these doctors are convincing these women that they basically can't have large families. You have world organizations basically giving guidelines to make you not have large families. You have birth control being given out at a young age, first for acne or mood things or all these little trivial issues. They'll be like, here, have some birth control, have some birth control. And then once the woman is older to the point where she's, you know, is of the childbearing age or in a relationship, she's been taking these expensive candies for a very long time. She doesn't even question it. No one tells her about the, you know, the potential abortifacient abilities of them. And so it's just been put into our heads over and over again. You don't need large families. Here's how you prevent large families. And, you know, as a white race, I see that as an issue, given how the minority families are just coming in large numbers.
What is your concern about that? What is your concern with seeing an increasing number of non-whites and a decreasing number of whites?
Well, you know, as your previous visitor was talking about, like I definitely look to South Africa or now Zimbabwe, and seeing what happened there when you had the flip of power from non-whites to whites. I think I read somewhere that the statistic is about 13%, where you see you have 13% of minority population. I think this was specifically black, but I can't remember correctly. Mix into a white population, and you're still going to be okay, right? We're all going to act basically the same was the idea. But once you get higher than that, then you start dealing with issues like South Africa. You see those crime rates that I was talking about skyrocket. And who's targeted? The whites are targeted. You look at, if you look at the rape statistics, it's not black women getting raped by white men. It's vice versa. You know, so my concern is like, that sort of thing, is a crime being committed against me or against my family. Seeing a lot of horrible things in the news. A little boy, like the huge Mall of America in Minnesota, got 3 years old, just slipped over the railing. For no reason. It was a minority who did it, didn't know the boy, didn't have a reason, just tossed him over the railing. He's 3 years old. And just random acts of crime and violence against white people increasing as we become more and more of a minority and not willing to stand up for ourselves.
You mentioned the random acts of violence against white people. That immediately brings to my mind the ever-popular knockout game, which we are told time and time again, isn't happening.
Is that happening? Right. I haven't heard about it recently, but definitely a few years ago, that was a big news thing. And they weren't saying, oh, they were saying it's not racially motivated. You know, you see you see any white commit any sort of crime, and somehow if there's a minority involved, it was racially motivated. But you see these large groups of black people knocking out, you know, white people, elderly people, and, oh, it's not racial related. Oh, sure.
Yeah, you never saw a video of a black guy knocking out another random black guy. That didn't happen. But still,
right.
It wasn't racially motivated. All right, so for you, it's a matter of population. One of the things that I've seen happening in the church that disturbs me is interracial adoption. Now, that affects our numbers as well, doesn't it? Stay with me. We'll be right back.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, it ain't gonna happen. A book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It ain't gonna happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled MEJ.com, or call Caritas in the U.S., 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress, now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back, folks, to the final segment in the second hour of the Political Cesspool radio program for this evening. I'm Winston Smith, sitting in for James Edwards, and Sam Bushman is working furiously behind the scenes to preclude any other technical difficulties like we had. Thanks very much, Sam. You handled that seamlessly. I appreciate it. So we're continuing with our sort of man on the street interviews. And my next guest is a gentleman named Ryan. Ryan, are you there?
Yes, I am. How you doing?
I'm very well, sir. And you?
I'm doing good.
Thank you for taking the time to come on the program with me.
Oh, I'm glad to. Thank you.
All right, let's get right into it. You're a chemist, am I right?
Yep, that's correct.
Does that equate to ethno-nationalism to you?
Yeah, I see it as a natural extension of the same thing.
What does that mean to you?
Well, kinism is the realization that my race is an extension of family. It's a common blood. And, you know, the same care I have for my family is extended in a real way to the rest of my kin. You know, an extension of familial love to kindred. And ethno-nationalism is to have a legal and physical barrier around that extension of the familial bond, to define it legally and to protect it, and to provide a system for that natural in-group preference for it to thrive.
So just because you prefer to be around and to consider the welfare of your own people first, does that necessarily equate, in your mind and heart, to a hatred for others, for other races?
Not in the slightest. Not in the slightest. The only time that it would ever be expressed in any kind of aggressive or outward way is in defense of my own family. You know, if somebody breaks into your home with an intention to do harm to your family, of course you protect them. You fight to protect your family. But primarily, the expression is only to work to preserve and to benefit what is my own. That's how God created it to be, I believe.
Now, what I just mentioned there is something that we hear and read a lot of, that kinists, because we love our own people, that automatically means that we hate other races. And as you said, I agree with you. It does not in the slightest. We don't hate any other race because of their race. We hate certain individuals because of their behavior, but we don't automatically extend that to every other member, which is something that is not granted to white people. You know, when a white person commits a heinous crime, suddenly we're all guilty. So that was one
right.
Misunderstanding. That was one misunderstanding of ethno-nationalism. What other misunderstandings have you come across?
Well, I haven't really thought of any. Just primarily that one is the most obvious one, really, that people think it's a kind of internalized hatred for other people, which it's not. But other than that, there's nothing that sticks out in my mind, but that doesn't say there's other misconceptions, or there isn't other misconceptions.
One of the misconceptions I've come across is that people equate kinism with you know, segregation, such as the Democrat Party espoused and actively pursued and instituted back in the 50s and 60s. We do believe in something like segregation, but it is not based on anything other than the desire to protect our own and to be around our own. Now, and on college campuses these days, racists of color are demanding their own safe spaces where they can say what they really feel. You know, in public, they speak very badly about white people to begin with, and they seem to have no inhibition to doing that. It just makes me wonder what they're going to say in their safe spaces, where nobody can hear them.
Yeah, that's right. If if they're willing to say to my face these terrible things, what are they saying behind closed doors when I'm not there to hear?
It's maybe it's paranoid, but it kind of makes me wonder if they're plotting, you know?
Yeah, it definitely makes me feel the same way. But when I think of kinism, I don't think of myself getting that kind of closed door space where I can plot against others. I am thinking about what I can do to build a heritage for my kids and by extension for my race, because I want my kids, my grandkids, my great grandkids to have a place to thrive. And naturally, ethno-nationalism is the way that you manifest that. You know, and kinism is the drive inside me to produce that.
Do you see any issues that we're facing as a tribe, as a race, that's caused you concern?
Yeah, I see this kind of mass propagandization that has occurred to our race. There's kind of been like this large-scale psychological abuse that's been leveled against us. And we have, as a race, internalized it and began to believe it. Kind of how a abused person internalizes the words of their abuser and begins to lose their identity through that. I believe we as a race, have somewhat internalized this sort of abusive and aggressive language towards ourselves and lost our identity in a way. And I think we as a race need to think about if that's true. We need to focus on really understanding how things are. Focus on truth. Do not willingly participate in a lie that is designed to hurt you.
Why do you think white people are susceptible to that?
It may be a kind of overextended empathy in a way. Like we project our own idea of implicit trust onto mm-hmm. other people, and I think that damages us in a way, because there are evil people out there without conscience who have the will to do evil. And if you project trust onto them that you would expect from anyone else and you'd think other people would expect of you, that can easily be taken advantage of by a person with no conscience.
So we basically bought into the words of people who hate us.
That's right.
That's something that I will never understand about white people. We are so willing to listen to people who hate us and to take their words at heart and to think that what they say to us is meant for our good.
Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to realize and comprehend how evil some people can be and are willing to be. And I think that's part of the root of it, is people automatically think, oh, nobody could be that evil. Nobody could will that much evil against me as an individual or as a part of this greater identity.
To me, it seems almost that a lot of white people think there is some kind of virtue or some kind of honor in fighting from a position of weakness, and they will embrace a position of weakness intentionally. Have you noticed that?
I have. I absolutely have. And it's baffling to me, too.
It's almost a racial masochism.
Yeah, it's kind of an internalized masochism, that you believe that you are doing something virtuous by hurting yourself. And it's almost like Stockholm Syndrome or something like that.
Well, you weren't always a kinist, I'm sure. Were you ever Were you ever one of the people who were supportive of other races, and you weren't aware of anyone who has evil intent to us as a people? Were you ever one of those?
When I was very young and a lot more naive, I was more of that mentality. But as I grew older, and by the grace of God, I was under the tutelage of a good pastor and a good father, and I learned and I read a lot of books. And
okay, Ryan, that's all the time we have for you. Thank you very much for joining us. I'll try to get in touch with you later. Folks, stay with us for the final hour of this evening's broadcast of the Political Festival.
Another hour of the Political Cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.